And you're listening to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Stay tuned for more No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music.
Clear cutting chainsaws killing the trees. Something everything that lives in peace. Our animal friends are on the run.
You're listening to Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis. Each week I bring you No Compromise news, views, poetry, and music for activists on the front lines of the environmental movement. And this show is going to be a special interview. This is the second half of the Minnehaha road blockade occupation that occurred in Minneapolis, Minnesota. This is brought to us by the Earth First Radio Network field reporter, Aeon Blue. So without any further ado, we're going to go into the second half of this interview.
And then I was blind, and at that point, I was sitting on the peak of the roof with a blanket around me. It was below zero, and there was at least an inch of snow covering the roof and me in the blanket. It didn't start to snow until after I was on the roof. I didn't raise a hand in my defense. I didn't raise a hand to keep them from spraying mace in my eyes. I maintained total nonviolence. When I went blind, I went limp because I was on the peak of a roof and I was quite frightened about what they might do. I was afraid that I would somehow fall off of that roof. They very gruffly pushed me to the edge of the roof where another police officer picked me up like I was a living human being and carefully carried me on the ladder. He seemed like nice guy. And then I was handcuffed and brought to jail and all that stuff. I was blind for 3 hours. I had chemical burns on my eyes that persisted for a week. Not on the eyeball itself, but on the skin all around the eyes and around the nose and the mouth. And I couldn't smell or taste for 3 days. It was really quite ugly.
So now we're interviewing Austin. Could you tell us about the raid?
For me, what happened was, more or less, I woke up probably about 10 minutes before we knew that the cops were going to be there, and looked out my window, heard someone talking on a cell phone saying, 600 cops are coming, what do you mean? So I kind of freaked out a little bit, and I was like, oh, okay, I should probably get into my lockdown position. So I grabbed my lockdown partner, and I was like, hey, I just heard 600 cops are on the way, let's lock down. So we did. We barely had time to get around to our barrels before they were pounding on our doors, knocking things down, breaking down walls, trying to find us. We were barricaded in a 10-by-10 room, and we had a 600-pound barrel, that cement-filled barrel that our arms were locked into. So they were pounding down the walls, trying to find us, screaming at the top of our lungs, you know, swearing at us left and right, and trying to figure out where we are. And I'm trying to, one of the doors that they're trying to smash in is, like, really close to my lockdown partner's head, and so I'm trying to let them know that if they knock that door down, then it's going to land on her head, and it will knock her out. And I'm all like, you know, hey, you gotta watch out, we're nonviolent protesters, and the door will knock her out if you knock her down. And they're like, yeah, you should have thought of that before, fuckers, you know, just totally didn't care. Kept going at it. And so, finally, the door snapped in half, luckily, and it snapped in at us, but it was caught by two pointers, so it didn't actually land on her head. And it snapped, it broke in enough that there was going at it. So they were more careful than they were. But they finally were able to come in, and when they did, they were still screaming at us constantly. They freaked out about the candles that we had lit for light, because that was the only thing that we had. Put all of our candle lights out. They went straight for the first person they said they went to, and so they went after her. And we're screaming at her, you know, you're trespassing. Use a rep, you gotta unlock, you know, she's all no, there's not. So they're like, well, we're gonna, you know, you better unlock, or we're gonna have to keep compliance on you, we're gonna cover spray you. And we're gonna unlock, we're gonna spray you. So what they did to her was took their hand and put it directly up under her nose, waffled her forehead back, which is lion's hold. We were told later on if they would have held that position for 30 more seconds, she would have died. So they did that to her, and she still wouldn't unlock. They're like, we're going to spray. And so they pepper sprayed her, and you know, I couldn't see anything that's happening. It was all behind me. And I just took a deep breath and was kind of trying to ingest what was happening, but it was all very surreal, and it was kind of like, not really knowing what was happening. And I knew that they were spraying her, but I didn't really comprehend that it was actual pepper spray and that it was actually happening that way.
Were they just spraying it into her eyes?
Yeah, they held it probably maybe 2 or 3 inches from what she said from her face, and just sprayed directly into her eyes. And, you know, she was locked out. She couldn't move or do anything. So after they did that, she's still like, no, I'm not going to unlock. I'm not. They come over to me. And they said, you know, same thing. We're going to spray you. So I was kind of trying to prepare myself, psych myself up a little for it. I took a big deep breath, closed my eyes, and sprayed into her face. Knew that it was a little bit better that way, and it probably would be better if I was able to pull out and resist the urge. My eyes immediately opened up, so it went into my eyes. Yeah. I don't know, I felt my body convulsing, and I felt the effects taking place. You know, it was all like causing shortage of my breath, and I could hardly see a thing, and I was breathing very rapidly. Unfortunately, I have a past history of seizures, and when I start to hyperventilate, I will pass out, and I pass out and it causes seizures. And so I felt myself hyperventilating, and I felt myself getting to that point where a seizure could come on. And I knew that if I had a seizure while I was locked down, then I would hurt not only myself, but my lockdown partner as well, and that would probably just freak them out even more on top of it all. So I made the choice to unlock after several minutes of thought and getting dangerously close to having a seizure. I told my partner, look, I had to unlock, and I feel like I had a seizure. She said, okay. And so we both unlocked, and as soon as I did that, they threw me to the ground, knocked my face against a board that was nailed to the ground, and put their knees in my back and handcuffed me. I couldn't see what was going on still, and I was still at the ventilating. They were saying the effects of the pepper spray would wear off in 5 minutes, and I was like, shit, that's not going to happen. But, so I was blinded, and as soon as they stood me up, or tried to stand me up to get me out of there, they saw that I had a knife hanging from, so it was army knife hanging from my belt. They really freaked out about that. They were like, she's got a knife on her, search her! You know, like, she might have something more. So they all made this big deal out of that, and I was trying to find my partner and see if she was still in the room. I couldn't see and couldn't hear her saying anything to me. So I had just assumed that she was already let out of the room. They illegally searched all of my pockets. They like pulled their hand in my pockets and just threw them all over the place. And I was like, you can't do that. Made this big deal out of it. And they were just like, shut up, and kept yelling at me and screaming at me. And then they, I guess, were satisfied with what they did and found in my pockets and started to leave me out. And they led me over to where my lockdown partner was. Snow, and, like, no jackets and no shoes or anything like that on. They sat me down next to her to begin with, and you know, she was all like, "Are you okay?" and trying to make sure that we were both on the same page still. And they were just like, "No, get her away from her. Don't let her sit next to the other one." And so they led me around to the side of the house and didn't have to talk to her at all. I was calling for a medic because I was still feeling that seizure might happen, and I could hear people, you know, that were outside calling me and yelling and everything. They wouldn't get me a medic for 10-15 minutes before they decided that it was okay that they would let me see a medic. When I finally did see the medic said, "Fine, there's nothing wrong with you." The arresting officer said, "You know, she doesn't need to go to the hospital. We're going to take her with us." And the medic was just like, "Oh, well, okay." You know, he was willing to let me go be checked out or whatever. So I didn't know we needed, but nonetheless. So, yeah, that was basically all it was. They threw us all in a paddy wagon together, and it was a really intense time. It all seemed very surreal. It was so, and it just, they just stormed in upon us, and it was just like, I swear it was like I was outside of myself watching it happen. I mean, I couldn't see anything that was going on when it was happening, but I feel like I can picture it enough in my mind where I feel like I could see the whole thing as it happened. It's really weird. But, it's still taking a while to be able to comprehend it fully and to talk about it more with people. I'm still might sound a little emotional about it when I talk about it.
So, yeah, for good reason.
Yeah, yeah. I went to a panel in Eugene. There was a environmental law conference not too long ago in Eugene, and I was there, and they did this panel on police violence for corporate profit, and some of the people from out here flew in there and spoke at it, and there was also people from Eugene and Headwaters there, you know, telling their tales and showing video clips and everything. And it was just so intense. It felt to me like when I think about what happened to me, it doesn't even really seem like what happened happened. But when I hear accounts of that happening to my friends, seeing video footage of it or anything, it just seems so much more real. It seems like that's what's happening. And I don't know, it's weird. I can't even comprehend it happening to me.
You were with Aspen, who was in the last raid. Could you tell us about that?
Well, the raid consisted of about 600 police officers. It was a very, very scary thing. I personally was locked down in the basement of one of the houses, the house that was labeled House E, on the raid file footage.
Now, how many houses were there altogether?
Seven houses. What happened to us is, as they were coming in, we were awoken to four cans of tear gas. They came into our room. Our room was about 10 foot by 10 foot, so four cans of tear gas. And it was incapacitating to anything.
And were you guys locked down then?
Yes. After starting to clear out, it took a good few 5 minutes for it to clear out. I noticed that my locked-in partner had left.
Right now, some of our listeners might not know exactly like what kind of contraption you're locked into. Could you explain like the process a little bit?
Well, we were locked down to 5 minutes for it. It was full of cement. And that being full of cement was immovable. It was over 2,000 pounds. Should I go on?
No, that's good.
Okay. Once I noticed my lockdown partner was out, I sat for a minute and looked up, threw another can of tear gas down at me, and then my nasal system was just exploding and I couldn't breathe and see. So I got up and I got out. There was my 2 foot hole that we called in there. I came out of there. I got my feet out, pulled out the rest of the way, and threw on the ground, and immediately handcuffed. And after handcuffed, I was kicked in. I don't know what the officers did. While I was being hit, my injury has been poured on my head, and my eyes were being held open from the top, which made my eyes wide open and my mouth wide open because they were pulling so hard. My eyes and mouth. That happened. They stopped kicking and hitting me and said, "Is there anybody else in there?" I couldn't talk. My mouth was numb. My whole body was just numb. So they didn't believe. I didn't answer them, so they started beating down the wall that we had barricaded by our lockdown. There was no one else in there. And after that, they picked me up. Each of the steps going up.
And you still had the pepper spray in your eyes?
Oh, yes, indeed. Once I got outside, they sat me down. The only reason I knew it was outside is because it was freezing out. I could tell the temperature changed. They sat me down, grabbed a cloth, and wiped my face so all the pepper spray would work again, or I don't know, but it started burning a lot more. And after they rubbed my face, they just carried me to where everyone else was sitting. And I was just laying there barefoot in the snow. I lay there for about 10 minutes straight. I was just excruciating amount of pain. And finally, about 10 minutes later, a medic came up and flashed a flashlight in my face. And the reaction from the people that were sitting around that were pepper sprayed that could see was amazing. From what they told me, my face was just full of blood. I was drooling. I had no control of any bodily function or anything. I was looked at by a medic. He said, "I'm fine." and you know, the support from the other people that were there saying, you know, he's not fine, you know, take care of him. So they kind of dragged me through, you know, they dragged me along the pavement to an ambulance, and they got me in an ambulance, and the ambulance driver said, "What's your name?" And I said, "I'm not telling you." "No, he's not telling you your name. I need these handcuffs off." My hands were just completely numb. I had no feeling anywhere. It was the most amazing experience. And the ambulance, the medic said, "Well, if you're not telling me your name, I'm not helping you." And they took me out of the van, the ambulance, into a van. I sat for about 20 minutes until the van was filled up with other people that were arrested from the house that we were in, and brought down to the station. Once we were brought down to the station, we sat inside for a while without getting any of our handcuffs taken off. There was just no blood flowing right through any of our hands. It was and, finally got the handcuffs off, put in the cell, and I got looked at by a nurse in the hospital in the jail, and she said I was fine, even though I had an open laceration on the top of my head. And it took about 45 minutes before I was allowed to wash my face. And by the time they did that, the pepper spray had stopped burning, and which it was equivalent to about 2 hours after I had gotten sprayed. And by then, you know, it stopped burning. It was burning all over again. And 2 days later, I was out of jail. So,
was your face still burning?
No, but once I took a shower after I got out of jail, all the things that were in my hair started washing out, and my whole body was inflamed for about 4 hours.
So you're doing beer. So tell us about yourself and what's happening here.
Well, I'm Native American, and I came here August 10th from the Sundance. A few of us were down at the Sundance, and we heard from Chris Lee's our spiritual leader. He heard from the Earth First that they need a spiritual leader down here, they need help. So Chris announced at the Sundance that they need help down here, Native Americans, on the Highway 55 route. So we got back from Sundance August 10th, and me and my nephew Zach, we decided to check it out. So we came down August 10th and met Jim Anderson, and he showed us around, and he asked me like to support him, so he said good. He said, "Go on and see if we can stay here." So we went down there to Highway 55, checked all out, and they explained to us what they were trying to do. They were trying to cut the trees down. They were trying to make a highway through the sacred sites. And so we, the first thing we did, me and Zach, we told him that if we're gonna be camped out here for a while, we gotta make a sacred fire. So August 11th, me and Zach made the sacred fire there. And we had ceremony there, blessed it and everything, and then so they've been going ever since, from August 11th until December 20th, sacred fire. That was for the elders. Elders came down, they told us that that's what we should have to do, so we listened to them because people come down here. And anytime when you have a takeover or you're going to protest against somebody, you're going to trespass on someone, and it's going to be for a while. The first thing you got to do is make a sacred fire, so that way they know that you're there for a purpose. The purpose is there to keep the people safe, and also to make sure that the people stay strong there, and so you know everybody gets along good. That's what it was, a peaceful, nonviolent people. And that's the first thing we seen when we came in off the road. We seen the sign there: no violence, no alcohol, no drugs. It's gonna be a peaceful, nonviolent demonstration. That's what we liked. First thing we seen, I told some Earth First, I said that's what I liked. And so then we decided to go down there and stay there for a while. So I was working security, you know, at the AIM Patrol Peacemaker Center for quite a few years, and had my own apartment. So as I go down there, then I had a choice of either keep my job or else supporting the brothers and Earth First there. And I thought about it, prayed for one to sweat, and I figured that it was more important for me to stay at the Highway 55 takeout and support people and support Mother Earth, because that's the main thing that we're serious about, that we do. We protect Mother Earth, make sure that people don't come in and tear up the ground. And especially when they told me that there was sacred sites here, and Jim showed us the 4 sacred trees here and the whole route, and we decided right there we're gonna stay here. So I went down there and I stayed down there. Eventually, you know, I lost my job, I lost my apartment, but I felt in order for me to really protect them and help them out, support them. You know, I had either a choice of losing my job and apartment or else staying down there, so I decided to stay down there. And so we were down there, you know, quite a while. You know, we were protecting the land, doing security all night, and watching, you know, for the MnDOT to come in. I know they were trying to get in there, trying to get us off the land, and we know where there's sacred sites here. We know there's burial grounds, and the thing is that too many people have been digging up our ancestors' bones all over without even telling anybody about it, digging up artifacts like that, you know, so we didn't want that to happen again, so we decided to stay down there.
Right. Why were they being dug up?
They were being dug up for contamination like that. You know, they wanted, you know, a lot of them were, you know, sometimes the bones could be 200, 300, 400 years old, and that's what they do, you know, they dig them up, you know, but we decided we weren't going to let them dig them up. I know we had discussions about it and everything, like, you know, that you won't go around and dig up forests down, won't dig up other people's bones, or if you see grave sites, you're going to dig them up, you know, so why are they going to dig us up and examine our bones and see where we're coming from? We know we were the first people here, and, you know, it was something that was very important to me spiritually. We talked to Chris, our spiritual leader, talked to Harry Charger, Overlooking Horse, and they said the same thing, is that this site right over here by the four sacred trees, especially, is all sacred, and it's ceremonial grounds. And a long time ago, they had a lot of ceremonies here, and our people were living right here on the ground. They had vision quests, and they were probably praying here and living here, and that's how they were doing, you know. So he said the same thing. He said it's spiritual here, and that's what we got to do. We got to stay here protected. We knew we were trespassing, but yet, you know, in our hearts, that's more important, that to protect our sacred sites, protect the ground where our people were buried. We know that on the area right over here, we know that our people's bones are scattered here, because we know that the four sacred trees, a long time ago, they used to bury our people above grounds on scaffolds. And so we know that just on the four sacred trees, we know we had an elder, a woman, two girls, and a baby boy buried on the scaffolds in the four sacred trees. And eventually, you know, their bones disintegrate, so we know someplace around here their bones are under the ground, and we didn't want them digging a highway through the sacred sites that were digging up our people's bones, and so that's why we wanted to save it, you know. And also the oak trees are very, very special to us, and we didn't want them cutting down the trees just to make a highway through and try to make a highway someplace else. This whole land you see around here would be a mouse pile, and over here and back there, you know, it's sacred to us people, you know. And Earth's First, they were the first ones here. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing as Earth's First. That's what they do. They fight for the land, fight for the trees, sacred grounds, and different kind of plants that are buried there, you know. And so when we talked to Earth's First, and they told us the same thing, you know, then I just, you know, I said I'm going to support Earth's First, and I'm going to support my people, the Dakota people. And so that's what we've been doing. You know, we've been doing it for going on 7 months now. I like it when Earth First told me that they were nonviolent, peaceful. And that's how we were since 85. A lot of people see, I'm with AIM and supporting AIM and with AIM. And a lot of people figured at the end that when AIM come down here, that would be violent. Mm-hmm. We'd be bringing guns and like that. But we told Earth First that, you know, that ever since 85, we turned into a spiritual moment. Nonviolent movement, you know. And so that's how we've been since 85, you know. Forget what was in the past, you know, when we were taking over Wounded Knee, taking over different offices, damn like that. Now it's a spiritual movement, and Earth First liked that because they knew that, you know, we were nonviolent also and peaceful. And so we come down and we told them, you know, that that's what we'll do. We'll come down and support them. Cause a lot of times when they do anything with sacred grounds, sacred sites like that, Mother Earth, that if they call AIM, we're there. All they got to do is ask us, and if it's important, we'll come there. And so we came down here, and then my Uncle Clyde, he came down and explained to him. And so he's one of the leaders of AIM in Minneapolis. And so him and Dennis Banks also came down here, and they really supported us. And they all said the same thing, that we got to stick here. It's hard, because the thing is, you know, I've been here ever since day one, August 10th. And a lot of times you don't get much sleep, you don't get a chance to get off the ground, because someone's got to be here always doing security 24 hours a day. And protecting land, protecting the people here. So, you know, the thing is, you know, we went to jail, but, you know, the thing is to me, that we went to jail for a reason, for a purpose, and that's to protect our sacred fire and our sweat lodge and that. You know, we couldn't do it. They came in storming like that, you know, but they destroyed our sacred sweat, our sacred fire, and that's the same thing that we did, you know, when we came down here. The elders wanted, said we should have a sacred sweat lodge there, so we did. We got a Inipi, and we built that, and a lot of elders come down, spiritual leaders came down, blessed the sacred sweat lodge. We had a lot of Earth First also came in and joined us with the ceremonies, and that was really good. You know, it made my heart warm because I seen Earth First really got into it and support us in a lot of our ceremonies, our pipe ceremonies, our sweat lodges. You know, also same thing we're doing, we're protecting springs because that's cold spring water, that's the only one left in around Minneapolis, around this area. They already destroyed five of them making highways, and if they go make a highway close to this sacred springs here, it's going to destroy that sacred spring there. 100 years ago, it's our people, that's where our people lived on, by the spring, that's where they lived on. They use that for medicine, they use that for food, they use that for sweat lodges, they use that for sacred ceremonies, and that's how we want it. We want to keep that sacred spring there. It's cold spring water, as sacred as this right now, and fresh it is. You can't find no other spring around here that's as fresh as this one right here.
And people here are drinking the water too.
Yeah, we drink the water, we use it for our sweat lodges, we use it for our medicine, our coffee. People come here and they want cold spring water for some of their family members are sick, or they got they either have cancer, rheumatism, or colds like that, so they come and we give them cold spring water and they take it home. And one of our elders, Linda, said that she takes it to her brother, and ever since her brother been drinking that cold spring water, he's been feeling better. And so that's what he used it for, you know, a lot of things like that, for medicine and for ceremonies, Nipi ceremonies, pipe ceremonies, and everything like that, you know.
And you told me earlier that you were able to save the ashes from the sacred fire in December?
Well, when we went down, we all got arrested in jail, and some of our friends were here. They just tore the sweat lodge down, the sacred fire, but some of our people went there and they got some log that was still burning, and they got some of the ashes, and while we were in jail, they used the ashes and they started the sacred fire up again. And so when we got out of jail, we went down there, and me and Jim went down to the old site by the sacred fire, and there were some girls down there. They were sitting around the sacred fire, and they asked us, you know, they said, "Is it okay, Bear, if we keep the fire going?" I said, "I love you for it." I said, "That's great, you know, that you keep it going, you know, because it's good." And they had tobacco ties around, they put tobacco, and they sat around it. And they didn't put the sacred fire out, the police, that, you know, so they still had some embers there. And while we were in jail, they went down and they started the fire up again, you know, but I guess a day or 2 days later, the fire truck and the cops come and they kicked them off and they put the sacred fire out with the holes. But they kept it going for at least a day and a half, the sacred fire, which is really good.
Right.
Yeah.
And the one that's burning now has the same ashes.
Yeah, well, when we came down here, we had a little fire going, but we didn't really have a sacred fire yet. And so when me and Zach came down, again, Zach came back down here, and there was only a few people here, but we wanted to get a sacred fire, so the one over here, it wasn't actually a sacred fire. We were thinking about making one. We didn't make one. So a few weeks later, we had a ceremony around the sacred fire. You know, we smoked a pipe and we put tobacco on. And what we did is that, you know, we smoked the pipes there. And so we can do it like that, make it into a sacred fire.
This has been a special report by Earth First field reporter Aeon Blues for the Earth First Radio Network. I want to thank you folks for tuning in. This is Earth First Radio. It's produced by Earth First Santa Cruz and affiliated with the Earth First Radio Network. And our theme music is written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening, and tune in to the next Earth First Radio show for more no compromise news, views, poetry, and music.